It is easier now to self-custody money through Bitcoin, through stable coins, etc. The necessary ingredients for people to use private keys have proliferated through secure elements in phones and through secure small devices like YubiKeys or hardware wallets. Like, people have the ability to secure and use private keys much more easily than they did at any other point in the history of private keys back since they were invented in the middle of the 1900s.
You're listening to Because of Bitcoin, a podcast that shares the personal stories of how Bitcoin is having a real impact in people's lives, including mine. I'm your host, Mauricio Di Bartolomeo, the co-founder and CSO of Ledit. And without further ado, let's get started with today's story. Bitcoin functions as a digital bearer instrument that offers unprecedented optionality on how to hold it or store it. Broadly speaking, there are three ways of doing this. You can keep it in self-custody, which means the bearer of the private keys is solely responsible for the asset and its security. You can store it through collaborative or multi-signature custody, where you distribute the control of the private keys among two or more signing devices or agents. Or you can trust a third-party custodian to hold your assets and keep them safe on your behalf. There are trade-offs to every option, and users can select the option or combination of solutions that are most suitable to them. Hardware wallets have pioneered the way in making self-custody easier by making devices and software that are easy to use. Qualified custodians like BitGo, who acts as Ledin's primary custodian, have pioneered third-party custody by offering regulated and insured custody solutions that allow clients to outsource the security of their digital assets to experts. When it comes to collaborative or multi-signature custody options, one company stands above the rest, Casa. In this episode, I sat down with Nick Newman, co-founder and CEO at Casa, to dive into the benefits and trade-offs of different security options, how Casa has made collaborative options easy to use, and the challenges that collaborative custody options present in the context of regulated financial services, like Bitcoin-backed loans. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Nick Newman. Nick, how are you, man? Welcome to the show.
Great. Great to be here. Appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk about self-custody and all the things around it.
Definitely. There's a big conversation happening around self-custody, thanks to our friend Michael Sillard's recent comments. We'll get into that. That'll be like a bonus question that came up over the last few days. But I would really love your take on that, just because I feel like the sort of institutional custody view contrasts in many ways with self-custody. And there's some tension between what one needs and what the other wants. But we'll get into that throughout the show. But the way I like to start the show, as usual, is by getting to know a little bit of the story behind the builder or behind the person. And what I'd love to hear from you, if you could share, is what was life like for you growing up? What was it like to grow up in the Newman household? And was money or finances a big theme in your family?
So I grew up in Kansas City and very like Midwestern upbringing, I would say. And finances were definitely a part of our regular kind of life as a family, especially when I was younger, because it wasn't like my parents made a ton of money, at least in the earlier days. And so it was very much like we need to be saving money, budgeting, all that kind of stuff that comes with being like a normal middle-class family. And so I was lucky that as I got a little bit older, my parents were actually divorced when I was relatively young. And then they both remarried to amazing people. And as we got older, the money situation, I guess, changed a little bit. And I was thankfully able to go to college without taking out any loans. And that was something that I was really lucky to have. So I won't pretend that I was hand to mouth or anything like that. But like, budgeting was an important part of our life. And another thing that my parents did for me that I think was great was they made the job really early. Like, I started working at like age 14, basically. What's the youngest age you are legally allowed to start working in Kansas? I was working. And before that, I was mowing lawns. And so I didn't have an allowance or anything like that. It was like, no, if you want your own money, you got to work. And that was what I used to pay for gas and to pay for food if I didn't want to eat at home or if I wanted to go out with friends. I had my own budget and money, and that also made me very budget and money conscious, because it wasn't like I had the credit card from the parents to go spend on things. So I think they did a good job of helping me understand the value of money. And that lasted into my adult years. In college, all my friends would make fun of me for how cheap I was. I would take their hand-me-down clothes as like, these are nice clothes and you're about to get rid of them. I will take this because I don't have nice clothes. It made for funny exchanges and good times, but I feel like I learned the value of money very early.
That's fascinating, and good on them for making you realize the value of the things that you're spending. Because I think that's a problem when you're trying to raise kids. I have two young kids and they keep wanting toys all the time. And I keep trying to explain to them that money doesn't grow on trees, but it's a hard concept to grasp. I guess as you get older, it becomes easier. I'm always fascinated by people that grow up in countries with relatively stable economies and currencies. And then you find your way into Bitcoin. I think that should be celebrated a lot more than I think it is. The fact that people like you found Bitcoin so early on with seemingly...
not early enough.
But in my circle, or when I got into Bitcoin, it was out of necessity, it was out of desperation, it was out of hyperinflation and currency controls. It's like the only way out, and you kind of accept it because it's the only option you have, and you find yourself forcibly learning about it in a stressful moment. Now, one, you grew up in the United States, in the Midwest, and you found Bitcoin, understood it fairly early on. I've interviewed quite a few people that are in similar setups, and one of the themes that I think keeps coming up again and again is there was typically an event in which either money failed you or property rights failed you or your family, and that's when you started to see the flaws in the current financial system. And therefore, that pikes the interest, and when Bitcoin comes, you run to it as an alternative to something you feel is broken. Are there any core memories from your upbringing or later on in life where you started to notice these flaws in the system and that planted the seed for getting Bitcoin later on?
I wish I had some heroic story here, but not really. So maybe I get to break the trend for you from your podcast guests, but I think a lot of people come to Bitcoin because maybe they lived in countries with bad currency, or they're worried about the US having bad currency. They're worried about the debt situation in the US. Maybe they had some experience where they lost control of their money or property in some way that made them really like the idea of Bitcoin and how you can control it yourself and be the sole owner of it. I think for me, it was more of like a excitement about the technological possibilities that come from the fact that you can have money that you fully control and that you can store effectively any amount of money easier than you could store a much smaller amount of money at any point in history. That was a little confusing, so let me re-say that as it is easier now relative to any point in history to self-custody money through Bitcoin, through stable coins, etc. I think that's very interesting. And when you look at the technology behind that, it's private keys and cryptography-based systems. And then you look at the fact that the necessary ingredients for people to use private keys have proliferated in a huge way, which is through secure elements in phones and through secure small devices like YubiKeys or hardware wallets. Like, people have the ability to secure and use private keys much more easily than they did at any other point in the history of private keys back since they were invented in the middle of the 1900s. You put some of those pieces together, and it's very interesting that now people can have freedom money that only they control that gives them ownership of one of the most important things in their life. And so I came from more of this philosophical angle of that, where like, wow, that's really interesting. That seems good for the world. And that seems like a recipe for massive technological and behavioral change. So I want to work on that, because today, when I first started back in like 2017, 2018, it was way too hard to do and really freaky. That's why I helped create Casa, and why we created Casa as a team was we want to make this significantly easier for people to do. And make it easy enough, make it safe enough, and you overcome the objections that people naturally have to this, and then allow them to experience that freedom and control and autonomy over one of the most important things in their life.
That's well said. And I can tell from even the way you describe what excited you about Bitcoin, why self-custody is so important to you. You know, the way you explain the wow moment is this idea that you can now be sovereign and hold your own assets without a third-party custodian. And I think in many ways that informs your business and what you guys offer, which we'll get into in a minute. So with that preface on why you love Bitcoin or what you love about what Bitcoin enables, when does Bitcoin come into your life? When did you first learn about Bitcoin?
It was probably 2013 or something. One of my friends was like, hey, should we start mining Bitcoin? I've heard about this Bitcoin thing. You want to check it out and maybe start mining it? And I didn't really look into it. I was just kind of like, nah. And then in, I think 2016 or no, this was towards the end of college. So it would have been maybe like 2014 or 2015. One of my friends texted me, hey, should I invest in Bitcoin? And I responded, no, I'm pretty sure that's a scam. And he brought this receipt back to me after I became CEO of Casa. He brought this back like, nice. I found this in our text messages. And I was like, damn it, wish I had taken a different approach in 2015. So it took me a while to come around to it. Unfortunately, I really didn't get into Bitcoin until like 2017. Now, of course, that seems like, wow, that was forever ago. You got to buy Bitcoin at like $3,000 a Bitcoin, but that's totally different than being early, in my opinion. So that was when I really started getting interested in it, and then started at Casa in 2018. So that was when I went full-time into the industry.
That's fascinating. And for those who are unaware, and we'll get into Casa in just a minute, you started Casa. One of your co-founders is Jameson Lopp, who is one of the biggest names in Bitcoin. He's probably one of the biggest OGs in the space. And he's like a very interesting character because he's got a very big following, but he's a very elusive person. Rarely do you see him anywhere. If I saw him on the street, I couldn't pinpoint him out. But it's by design. He's a privacy god. You know, I don't really know how else to describe him.
Yeah.
How do you meet this elusive person, and how do you guys decide to start this company?
It's been a wild ride, to be honest. I was not the original CEO and founder of Casa. I was actually recruited by the first CEO, and I had one weekend for fun when I was working at my previous job. I went and participated in the first Denver hackathon, and I had an idea for a product to build, and I actually flew to Denver and didn't know anybody and was just like, hey, I want to build this thing on the group chat Slack. I want to build this thing. Does anybody want to build it with me? And I got a few people that were interested. We built it. It was very similar to what Casa was building at the time, but I didn't know about Casa, but it was basically like social recovery for your private key. And we ended up winning the hackathon, which I did not expect at all going into the weekend because I was just going there for fun, right? So I left the company I was working at the time to start a company around that. And at the same time, the previous CEO of Casa, his name was Jeremy Welch, he reached out to me and was like, hey, do you want to come be head of product at Casa? So if you check my LinkedIn, I was head of product at Casa for the first like year and a half. And I was employee number 6, I think. And Jameson was actually employee number 5. So they had just recruited Jameson and they got a hold of him because they had a connection through the North Carolina Bitcoin group where Jameson lived at the time. That was actually all before Jameson went mega private. So his whole privacy thing happened 2 years later. So anyway, Jameson and I were both recruited to Casa and met there. And then at the end of 2019 was when I took over as CEO of Casa. And at the time, Casa was actually struggling a bit and we kind of remade the company. We had a Casa Node product, which a lot of the OG Bitcoin people will remember.
Oh, yeah.
That was a super exciting product. Turns out it's really hard to do. It was a very difficult product to support. We also had the core Casa product that we have today, which is the security product. And then we had another app called SatsApp that connected to the Casa node. And at the end of 2019, we were kind of struggling. It was in the depths of the bear market. It was definitely crypto winter. So we made some changes to the company. We cut the product lines for the Casa node and SatsApp, which was very sad because people loved the Casa node. But we just decided to focus on the security aspect. We said, this is the biggest problem. It's the most scalable one for us to solve. We're just going to focus on this. And it was the original problem that we created Casa to solve in the first place. So let's focus on that. And that really ended up being a moment where we actually re-co-founded the company. And Jameson and I became co-founders of the company at that point and started leading the company from there forward. From a product decisions perspective, that was the right move because midway through 2020, COVID happens, Bitcoin price starts ripping, and everybody's like, we need better security for our Bitcoin. And I think that most people up until that point actually knew Casa as the Casa node company. And it took us like the first 6 months of 2020 to work that out of the system and to help people realize, actually, we have this great security self-custody product. And then by the second half of 2020, we were ready for the Bitcoin price ripping and for people wanting more security. And we grew the business a ton over the next like couple years during that bull market. That was kind of the wild ride of how I got connected with Casa and how I eventually became CEO.
That's a phenomenal story. Thank you for sharing that. I was always curious to understand how that came to be. And I know the name Jeremy. Jeremy Welch has been involved in many other great businesses.
Yeah. He was at Kraken a little bit after Casa, and he's a good guy.
It's funny how you continue to see the people that stay in Bitcoin and just sticking to it. You eventually find a way. You do great things because this is a great industry. It's fascinating to see what you and Jameson have done with Casa. I remember the note very fondly. I remember the SatsApp very fondly. I even think you guys have an incentive program for people that would check the node. More often you would get sats. All those things, I feel like it was yesterday. And now let's get into a little bit about your security offering and what you offer at Casa. And before I dive deeper into this, there's people that listen to this show that have different levels of understanding of how the Bitcoin network works and how Bitcoin works in general. And I'm going to try to give a little preface here around Bitcoin custody. And please step in and correct me where you think it could be improved. But in a very general sense, I think Bitcoin enables you to have many options around how you want to store that Bitcoin and keep it safe. So I think one of the key things I love about Bitcoin is optionality. And the main three ways I understand you can keep custody of Bitcoin is on your hardware wallet. So it's a one single hardware wallet. You have full possession and control over the keys. It's your fate. You run your own fate. The second one is through a custodian. So a place like BitGo or an exchange or even a place like Ledin where you keep assets with us. We have like access to the keys on your behalf. You can withdraw them. But when your assets are there, they are in many ways in our possession or in a custodian's possession. And they have to be given back to you when you request a withdrawal, similar to a bank. And the third option is collaborative custody, where you can spread the ownership of the keys between one or more parties and get some type of quorum set up so that a decision to move Bitcoin or do anything with it has to be done by two out of three keys or three out of five keys. And those keys can be you in different places or different people. So can you explain a little bit about what is collaborative or multi-sig custody and how is Casa different than other solutions out there for people to store their Bitcoin?
I agree with generally your categorization of the different ways to store Bitcoin. I mean, you can put it into two big buckets. Are you holding the keys or is somebody else holding the keys? And then within the you're holding the keys perspective, you can have that collaborative custody angle where you're holding some of the keys and somebody else holds some of the keys and you need some mixture of keys in order to approve a transaction. So an example with Casa is, let's say you're using we call it a three-key vault. So this means you have three keys that open this vault that protects your Bitcoin. And you need any two of those three keys to actually send that Bitcoin somewhere. So you'll have a key on your phone, a key on a hardware wallet or a YubiKey or one of the hardware devices that we support, and then a key held by Casa. So the reason that this is better than a single key that you control is with that single key that you control in self-custody, that's a single point of failure. If you lose that key, you've lost all your Bitcoin. There's been way too many stories of this happening. And sometimes people think, well, yes, but I don't, multi-sig sounds complicated. I don't know that I want to do multi-sig. That may not be for me. And I can tell you that with Casa, it is just as easy to do multi-sig as it is to do a single hardware wallet, because you still just have that one hardware wallet, but you add a key on your phone, you add a key held by Casa. And now this means that if you lose that hardware wallet, you still have your other two keys to actually access your Bitcoin. And so this is really the evolution of self-custody into a safe way to self-custody that anybody can do, because we're all humans, we're all going to make mistakes, and you can't put yourself in a situation where you're not allowed to make a mistake. You're going to make a mistake. So you need to put yourself in a situation where you can recover from that mistake. And that's where multisig comes into play. So in a typical transaction with Casa in that three-key vault, you're creating a transaction from the Casa app, just like you would in any kind of Bitcoin wallet. And then you're approving that transaction from your phone, which just happens automatically. And then there's one more step before you can send the Bitcoin somewhere. You have to approve that transaction from your hardware wallet as well. And so our software walks you through doing that. You approve on your hardware wallet or your YubiKey, and then you can send the transaction and you're good to go. Now, if you had lost that hardware wallet, you would request Casa to sign that transaction as the second signature. And so that means you can always count on us to have our key for you. That means that you've got that resiliency in case you lose that hardware wallet. You can add in a new key and get back to full health and use the Casa key to help you recover. And then we go to a higher level of security, which you kind of alluded to, which is a five-key vault. This is a 3 of 5 multi-sig. And this means you have 5 total keys. You need any 3 of them to spend. And so what that actually lets you do is have more resilience and redundancy for storing larger amounts. So when you're storing a really significant amount of Bitcoin, which typically a lot of our clients are storing large amounts of Bitcoin, those are the people that really get a lot of benefit out of Casa. You want that extra level of redundancy to make sure that even if you lose 2 hardware wallets at the same time, you still haven't lost your Bitcoin. You have to actually lose 3 keys at the same time, which is just a huge amount of messing up all at once. That's the way that some of the wealthiest Bitcoiners secure their Bitcoin. It's in a 3 of 5 multisig with Casa, and it gives you the right level of redundancy to do that well. And so removing single points of failure is really what sets Casa apart from traditional single key self-custody. And then what sets Casa apart from everybody else that has built multisig as well over the years is we created the category around easy to use multisig based self-custody. We created this back in 2018, and we've been doing it the longest, and we're the biggest. We know what we are doing, and trust in time and market really matters in this industry. You want to know that the company helping you secure millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of your Bitcoin knows what they're doing and has been operating without losing Bitcoin for a long time. And then second, you can try our product compared to some of the other ones out there, but we're hands down the best user experience and the best from a design perspective. So we've really focused on solving the problems for people that come up when you self-custody. How do I integrate with hardware wallets easily? How do I have an experience that is a really nicely designed mobile app that I can understand that isn't scary when I'm trying to do my self-custody? How do I solve the inheritance problem? These are all problems that affect people who are self-custodying their Bitcoin. And between our software and our service team, who you can consider it as your most knowledgeable Bitcoin friend who can get on the phone with you at any point to help you through something, we've really nailed it from what people need when they're securing large amounts of Bitcoin.
That's great. And I think proof is in the pudding, because a lot of our clients are Casa clients and they say nothing but great things about their Casa experience. And of course, we always admit and encourage people to take self-custody when they're not using the assets on the platform, just because it's best practice. I see you guys as a sort of self-custody caddy, almost like a self-custody Sherpa that helps you make self-custody better. Even though we've been in this space for almost a decade, I still get sweaty hands when I got to approve a transaction, because it's this concept
totally
of irreversibility and you are owning your own mistakes, and we are all human, to your point. So I think what you guys offer is immensely valuable. one thing I wanted to touch on just for people, I know from experience what a lot of our clients that use Casa are like. So I have a bit of a persona in my mind of the person that uses Casa. But could you describe just at a high level the persona of a typical Casa client and what kind of plans do you have for these types of people?
Mm-hmm. We actually serve a pretty broad range of clients, like people securing all sorts of different amounts of Bitcoin from like a few thousand dollars worth of Bitcoin to hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. We help people who are all across the age spectrum. I mean, we don't actually collect this information, but we know just from talking to our customers. We've got people that are super young, like 20s, 30s, all the way up to people who are in their 80s. It just goes to show you the broad-based appeal and usability of what we've built, and also the fact that self-custody of your money is a solution and something that people of all ages want to do. But if I were to paint with very broad strokes what the typical Casa customer is like, we tend to have people who care about self-custody, obviously. They want great security. They appreciate great design and a really well-built product, and they're willing to pay a premium for that. You could solve this problem for free if you wanted to with open source software, but they really value the design, thoughtfulness, and service element that we've built into our product. And so they're willing to pay us for that. Then you also typically care somewhat about privacy. We don't KYC. We've taken a different approach to that than a lot of the other people that are in this business. And so we're not required to KYC our customers by law because it's a self-custody product. And so we don't. Whereas with some of our competitors, you go to sign up and you have to KYC to even use the self-custody product. So they care about self-custody. They care about privacy. And then they have enough Bitcoin that they're securing that they care about the security of that Bitcoin and don't want to lose it. This is where I think we find some of the people that are higher net worth, like really gravitate towards Casa solution because their Bitcoin is often a very material amount of their net worth. And so they have to think about these problems like, how do I protect against $5 wrench attacks? How do I protect against mistakes and loss from being a human? How do I protect against the problem of what happens if I die? How does my family get access to my Bitcoin? And then how do I just have somebody that I can call if I need help or have questions about my Bitcoin? And if you're with Coinbase, you cannot do that. And so we have very purposely built Casa in a way where for people securing large amounts of Bitcoin, they can give us a call and we will answer and we will help you right then and there, which is super helpful. It's very comforting for people, I think.
Absolutely, especially to your point when you're protecting so much of your net worth. And that makes complete sense with somebody with a lot to protect would look to go with the best way of protecting it. And that actually dovetails nicely into my next question, which is one of the things that I wanted to mention and the risks that you well mentioned earlier, how Casa helps you protect from. When you compare it to holding assets in a custodian, there's all of that plus the counterparty risk, right? Because as 2022 showed us, platforms that offer custodial services could also make mistakes like humans can. Right. And that's also a risk that you wouldn't be exposed to if you're using a Casa product. And the other point that I wanted to make was Bitcoin is in many ways scary to people because it's a new technology. And because of the sovereign nature of it, it lends an irreversible transaction nature of it. You have seen in the headlines that there's been hacks to certain exchanges. People have gotten their Bitcoin stolen from them, et cetera. In a world that's changing so rapidly, how do you guys stay ahead of the curve in security and usability? And I would argue one big difference between using open source software, which is open source and free, and no one's really investing, and there's no requirement for anyone to spend time on that and keep it up to date. Whereas you guys have built a business around staying ahead of the curve. So how do you do that?
Well, we stay ahead of the curve because it's our job to stay ahead of the curve, like you said. And so people, when they use Casa, are basically outsourcing that security expertise so that our customers don't have to spend the 10,000 hours to become security experts. We've done that. And the way that we design the product is we design all of the best practices in as defaults to the product so that you don't have to make these decisions. We just tell you what to do. And then what we do is we spend a lot of time thinking about how can we make self-custody better? What are the problems around self-custody that need to be solved? And how do we solve those problems in a really elegant, well-designed way? I have two examples of this from this year. Earlier this year, we released Casa Inheritance. We kept hearing over and over again from our customers, I feel great about my security while I'm alive, but what happens if I die? How does my family access this? And so we built Casa Inheritance for people's families. And I think a lot of people, when they think the way that some people have approached building an inheritance feature is it's actually built for the owner of the account. Like, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to like put this metal seed plate in a tamper-proof bag. You're going to put this in a place that your family member can access in case something happens to you. And here's a set of instructions for what they need to do in that case. And it's like, their family has never even used a hardware wallet. And now you're expecting them to go from metal seed plate to hardware wallet to multi-sig to recovering the funds. It just doesn't work. So what we built was, we said a key component of this inheritance feature is that it has to be easier for the family member to use than it is even for the account owner. Like, the account owner is a savvy Bitcoin person. Their family member often is not. So how do we make this as easy as possible for them in case something happens to the main account owner? So the way that it works is it leans on multisig, where you have to make sure that that family member has access to either 2 out of the 3 keys or 3 out of the 5 keys in case something happens. So in a 3-key vault, for example, we share an encrypted version of the mobile key from the account owner's phone to the main recipient family member's phone. And they do that just by scanning a QR code. So the account owner invites their spouse, for example, to set up a Casa account. They log in, scan a QR code, boom, they're done. So they're done with setup within 3 minutes. If you can open a menu at a restaurant, you can set up Casa Inheritance. Then when it comes time to recover the funds, let's say something happens to the account owner, they pass away. The family member opens up their Casa app, requests access to the vault, and that starts a 6-month timer. And during that 6 months, we're messaging the account owner saying, hey, this access has been requested. If you're still alive, go in and reject it. And if they don't for that 6-month period, then that allows that person to use that mobile key that's on their phone and the Casa key that's held by us in order to access the funds in the 3-key vault. And so it is a very elegant solution where the family member only needs their phone the whole time. And it just feels very approachable for them and helps them feel comfortable that, yeah, if something happens, I will be able to access this money, which sometimes is generational wealth for our family. So that was some of the thought where I think we think differently about some of these things. And that was the thought process that went into inheritance. And then the second feature that we released this year was the ability to use a YubiKey as a hardware wallet. And this is, I think, a really big deal and very exciting because hardware wallets are great from a security perspective, but pretty hard to use. And we just repeatedly hear from our clients, I love Casa, I don't love using hardware wallets. And so what we built was the ability to use a YubiKey as a hardware wallet. And a YubiKey looks like this. And it's much simpler than a hardware wallet. Like, I've got like a Ledger Stax here or whatever. And this is like basically a mini computer, right? And so it's cool for the people that want to go this far, but there's a lot of people that just want something really simple. And so we built the ability to use a YubiKey where all you do is plug it into your computer, tap it, and you're done. And that's like creating a key or signing a transaction or anything. And so how can we iterate on this to be simpler, simpler, easier, easier, while maintaining great security for people? And that, I think, is how we cross this bridge to much wider adoption of self-custody, which is the ultimate goal. We just want people to use private keys to make their lives more free, more secure, more private. And that's really what we're building around. And we just continually push ourselves on how do we make this easier? How do we make this more secure while keeping it simple?
That's a great ethos. And it's no surprise why so many people gravitate to your company and your services when they're looking to protect their Bitcoin. And BK says this pretty well. It's like $100 today. If you think Bitcoin's going to 100x, like, you should be thinking about 100xing your security posture around that Bitcoin. And I think all of us that are in this space are very bullish, and therefore we're going to want to protect our legacy in many ways. So it's fantastic what you guys are doing. And I know you've helped a ton of people, including our clients. And there's a point that I'm actually very passionate about, because I'm a big proponent of self-custody. I'm a big fan of self-custody. I've also been building a lending product for over a year, same time you've been building Casa. And when it comes to lending, the challenge that I think is become apparent today, even when you see what's offered in the market today, is that it's really challenging to scale the funding or the capital sources for these loans and service the needs that a lender has to borrow cash from an institution, because there are certain challenges. Many of our biggest founding partners are banks, and banks, they've slowly gotten there with qualified custody facilities like BitGo. Some of them have even gone out and bought their own custody facilities. However, it's a challenge when you're trying to offer at a client level a multi-sig solution for storing their collateral and trying to make that fit the structure that a bank needs in terms of security for their dollars when they are lending us the cash. I think what people miss sometimes is that a loan, different to other products in Bitcoin, is a transaction between two counterparties that doesn't reach finality right away. They both have to be protected for a long period of time. And in the same way that the Bitcoiner thinks that Bitcoiners are most precious asset and therefore they want to have the most control of it as they can during the life of a loan, the same thing goes for the lender. For the bank, they care little about the Bitcoin. It could be Bitcoin, it could be gold, it could be oil backing that thing, but they just want to know their dollars are safe. And there are certain challenges that we've kind of encountered as we discuss these possible structures with them, in terms of they have a hard time wrapping their head around some of the things. And some of the examples are, and I've been really looking forward to this discussion with you from someone that's been building multisig, what is your view on how we can incorporate this or bridge this, or if we can? And some of the challenges that I will kind of highlight, and just for the purposes of this conversation, is when a borrower puts their Bitcoin in a multisig and you are the lender, you don't have access to the collateral. There's certain thresholds that have to be met for you to be able to access that collateral. That comes with risks. The other one is that banks, being highly regulated institutions, have a really hard time with things being custodied in something that's not qualified custody. And I'm using air quotes because the definition of qualified custody changes whether yeah. you're here or Europe or at different places, but it's right. just what they have to play by. And then there's the other challenge, which is if you have a shard and I have a shard and they have a shard, who actually controls the Bitcoin? Whose balance sheet is it under? And so there's these certain incompatibilities when it comes to building a multi-sig loan solution at scale. There are some out there, but I think the proof is in the pudding, in that there isn't a globally available multi-sig solution. And the ones that are these peer-to-peer solutions that have extremely limited liquidity. And so do you have a view or a hypothesis on how we can overcome these hurdles so that multisig can start being used for more financial services as opposed to just self-custody?
Yeah, I think it's probably like a time thing, honestly. I think we are like just, and you could probably speak to this a little bit better, but it feels like maybe a couple of years ago, still most banks wouldn't even lend against Bitcoin in full custody, right? Like you were going to like some of the more crypto native hedge fund type of entities to lend dollars against Bitcoin. And so I think we're like just getting to the point where some of the traditional players are feeling comfortable lending against Bitcoin. And I think a part of it is it's just going to take more time to get people more comfortable with what they view as exotic custody arrangements. Now, that being said, I think the argument for why this stuff should eventually happen is that when you have collaborative custody of Bitcoin, you're inherently spreading out the risk of losing that Bitcoin and removing single points of failure. And so part of the argument for should the industry move towards accepting a distributed ownership, like collaborative custody type of setup around locking Bitcoin to then loan against it, is this protects you against something going wrong at BitGo and losing all of the collateral in a catastrophic event, basically. Part of the lender's job is to be mitigating their risk of catastrophe, protecting against the long tail systemic risks, or protecting against single party counterparty risk. And so both of those things can be protected against in a multi-sig arrangement. And so I do think that it's just a matter of time and education and getting to a place where somebody feels comfortable enough as a institution to really be lending large amounts of dollars against this. Now, that's all one part of it. But I think the other part is sometimes when you lend against Bitcoin, the lender actually wants the Bitcoin so that they can go lend it out themselves and to make more on that. And then they reduce the interest rate to the customer because they're able to earn back on going and lending out the Bitcoin on the other end. And in that situation, you're just never going to have a multi-sig that works because you have to be able to move the Bitcoin around. So I think there will always be this full custody model for some lending in Bitcoin. And then I think today, the multi-sig custody model hasn't really been scaled out. Like there's a couple of people like Unchained Capital that do it, but I don't really know what the scale looks like. And I think it's significantly smaller than some of the other players in the industry. And so I think that the model is going to take time from an adoption perspective. And honestly, what I could see happening faster and before the traditional financial players get into collaborative custody in a really big scaled way is I could see more DeFi-based approaches gaining more traction. You already have examples on Aave or whatever over on the Ethereum side where you've got the liquidity pools that are providing capital for loans against collateral, and that's in more of a distributed self-custody-based way. And I think with some of this development that's going on Bitcoin lately, like there's a company called Lava that's put out a more decentralized Lava loans protocol, super small, very early. And then there's obviously all the layer two work going on Bitcoin. I could see that stuff actually developing faster and growing faster than traditional financial systems getting into collaborative custody for their lending.
That's really insightful. And like I said, I was really looking forward to being able to speak with somebody that's been so long building around multisig to shed light on some of these issues and get your perspective. You know, I have mine, which I've written about, but it's very insightful to hear you say it. And I agree with you that it'll be a time thing because banks aren't even allowed to custody the Bitcoin and they hold it on their balance sheet today. Forget multisig. They just can't even hold it from an accounting standpoint. And that's going to take some time. So there's been a flurry of companies that are more and more often adding Bitcoin to their balance sheets. And the question around how are you going to protect that asset from a company perspective, they're also interested in exploring self-custody options as well. Do you guys have anything for companies that are looking to do this?
Yeah, so we actually just launched an enterprise plan a few weeks ago. And the reason that we launched that, we'd actually had businesses that were using Casa to self-custody for years. And we didn't really see a big market for that, though. We thought it would be something that would still be relatively small. So we wanted to stay focused on our plans for individual holders. But now with MicroStrategy having really popularized this idea of having a corporate Bitcoin treasury over the last year or really more than that, but within the last 6 months or so, it's really caught on with the public attention. That, I think, has opened a lot of doors for companies wanting to secure Bitcoin on their balance sheet and hold it as a treasury asset. That opened up the market in a way where we feel like it's going to grow, and we want to make sure that we're there in order to help companies do this well, because it's a very new thing. And I think the tendency is for companies to think of this like they would think of any other treasury asset, where they use a bank or bank-like custodian, basically, to hold their Bitcoin. And I think that's a mistake. I think that maybe for some of your Bitcoin treasury, that's fine to use a custodian. But your job as a executive of a company is to reduce risk in your treasury so that you can use your treasury to fund the business operations, product development, the things that you need to do to make your business valuable and to build things that customers want. And so part of your job is to reduce the risk of your treasury. And when you think about Bitcoin treasuries, you have a different set of risks with Bitcoin than you have had for any other asset that people are used to storing in their corporate treasury, money, bonds, treasuries, whatever it is, commercial paper, etc. And so in order to reduce the risk that comes from using a custodian, the risk that the custodian goes bankrupt and your money's locked up for a long time, the risk that the custodian's hacked and a bunch of your money is lost as part of that, the risk that your individual account is social engineered so that somebody on your team accidentally sends the money out to somewhere else. I think these are all risks that you can diversify with self-custody. And so it actually becomes a fiduciary duty to self-custody, part at least of your Bitcoin treasury. And so that's why we built the product, because there weren't really the tools out there to do that well. The companies that we talked to that were holding their Bitcoin in self-custody, they got kind of a janky setup where they're like using one hardware wallet, or they're kind of splitting it between a couple hardware wallets. They don't feel great about it. And they feel like they need a more robust solution that's actually made for them. And so that's what we built. We built something that really leans into what you need to standardize self-custody as a business.
That's brilliant. That makes a lot of sense, especially from a treasury management perspective. And as you were speaking, I think the example that came to mind is treasury best practices, even when you're managing cash, is to not leave more than $250,000 in any particular bank, which is the FDIC insurable deposit limit. So if you're holding or managing more than $1 million, ideally best practice is you spread it amongst four banks. Therefore, all your entire balance is insured, you're diversified, you're covered. On top of that, you probably go to treasuries or bonds, et cetera. But in the context of Bitcoin, to your point, it's almost like a responsibility to have part of it in self-custody. And you guys are making it very, very simple, which is a challenge. Frankly, I've come across a lot of my friends who are founders or from smaller companies. And to your point, they manage their entire treasury on a ledger or on some type of device, single key. And that opens them up to a world of risk.
Yeah. And so with the right tools, you can do this well. You can do it where it fits under your fiduciary duty and compliance requirements as a company, accounting requirements as a company. And you can do it a standard way that uses the benefits of how the core CASA product is built, which is multi-sig, multiple keys. You distribute keys to different people on the team. And then you have a cryptographic way to approve transactions by multiple people. In the traditional finance banking world, normally to send a wire, you have a two-man rule, right? You got to have two different people log in and approve the wire in order for it to send. Well, this lets you do the same thing with Bitcoin.
Right.
And so it's a great way for corporate treasuries to self-custody their Bitcoin. And when you think about, even think back to when SVB was failing and everybody was scrambling over a weekend in order to make sure that they had the cash to pay, make payroll on a Monday. If you were holding Bitcoin or stable coins in self-custody, you had a backup. And having that backup plan, that business continuity plan, is part of running a successful business. And so this is one of those really tangible benefits that you can get as a business holding Bitcoin on your balance sheet in self-custody, because it protects you against those systemic risk scenarios that previously you really weren't able to protect yourself against. If you think your bank's going to fail, you're trying to pull your money out before everybody else and get it to a different bank that you think isn't going to fail. And it turns into this hot ball of money flying all over the place where people are scrambling to protect their treasury. Well, when you secure it yourself, there's no scrambling. You know where it is. You have it. And that's a huge benefit for companies.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Nick. Really, really appreciate your time.
This was a great discussion. It was different. We got to talk about some personal stuff. I loved it. So thank you for having me, Mauricio.
I really love Nick's point that never before in human history have we been able to transport so much wealth in an inconspicuous manner. Bitcoin enables financial freedom and privacy in a way that no other tool had done yet. It also allows for innovative storage structures like multisig or collaborative custody, which, as we covered, distributes the risk of managing your keys across multiple devices or agent, which reduces central points of failure. Alternatively, you can also outsource your Bitcoin protection to a regulated or insured third-party custodian. What I love about Bitcoin is its optionality. There is no one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to storing digital assets. Different needs mean different solutions, and they allow more people to participate. Financial services must comply with regulations that are not yet optimized for digital assets, which complicates interactions with self-custody options like multisig. As regulations evolve, this could change. Unregulated options, like decentralized finance solutions, can advance more quickly on this front, but those come with additional risks. Bitcoin is all about choice. do your diligence before deciding how to custody your Bitcoin or which provider to use. Stay safe and stay tuned. We'll be back soon with another great guest. If you enjoyed this Because of Bitcoin episode, I would be very grateful for the 5 seconds it would take you to drop us a review and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. This will really help us reach even more listeners. And if you'd like to learn more about Bitcoin, be sure to check out our newsletter by subscribing at ledn.io. That's ledn.io. Again, this was Mauricio Di Bartolomeo. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, muchas gracias y los quiero mucho. Ciao, ciao.